Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because we're talking about The Devil's Advocate, which means I'm joined by the man himself. He has so many names, but we can call him Adam Risky. Hi, Adam.
Hooah.
I'm the devil.
Give me some legal pads. I got stuff to write down.
Hooah. It's time for a deposition.
So, during the day, you study for the bar exam. During the evening, you pony up to the bar, and we have some beverages.
This is going to be the whole show. It's just us doing Al Pacino.
Yeah. Not to jump ahead, but like, I think the part that I enjoyed the most, because I'd never put it together before, and I've seen The Devil's Advocate maybe like a half dozen times now, is he's supposed to be Reeves is supposed to be conceiving the Antichrist with Connie Nielsen.
Yeah.
And the whole time Pacino's just like, look at her. Pretty great. He's just like, you need to thrust. It's a must. And then, it's just like, no wonder why he didn't do it. It's just like
the weird coaching by Al Pacino. Like,
take a look watching. At my Shrek iPhone case.
Yeah, right. Oh, Shrek, that classic midnight movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How you doing, Adam?
Sure. I don't know. It's been a rough couple of weeks. But
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Are you excited for Junesploitation? By the time this show comes out, our calendar will be announced.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I always stumble my way into like watching like a dozen movies I've always meant to and just never had a reason to. So having thematic reasons each day is like to focus my energy is always nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you guys are unfamiliar with Junesploitation, it is our month-long celebration of exploitation and genre movies. Go to fthismovie.com. There should be a tab about Junesploitation, or just find the post that says announcing Junesploitation. Every day there's a different theme, and then you watch a movie that corresponds to that theme. And then you write about it in the comments or wherever you write about stuff. And it's a pretty good time.
Is there a 90s action day?
There is.
All right. Finally, I can watch Excessive Force.
Oh, I thought you watched it. Yeah. Thomas Ian Griffith.
Thomas Ian Griffith. Yeah. No, I own it.
To the next step.
And I've put it on my like stack of movies to watch like right away. And it's been there for a long time.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah.
Hey, Adam.
Hi.
Have you seen anything good lately?
It's funny you should ask that.
I always ask it.
Yeah, it's funny.
Oh, all right.
No, I'll get out the new stuff first, because I'm noticing, like, okay, so last year, so I keep a Google Doc keeping track of all the new releases I watched during the year. So, like, at this point, like through May, I think last year I was almost up to like 40 movies, okay. And this year I'm at like 18. And it's like some of it is just I just don't care anymore.
Right, right,
like
right.
I just things don't feel like, let alone worth the drive. Feel like, let alone worth picking up a remote. And I think I'm really hoping that the latter half of the year picks up for me because of like the 18 or 20 or whatever movies I've watched. I've like two of them.
Okay.
So two that I watched this weekend are not those two.
Okay.
I
know what one of the two is that you liked.
Yeah.
One was X.
Yes.
What's the other one?
Probably The Northman.
Oh, okay.
And even that's like.
And Kimmy, right?
And Kimmy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And The Automat.
Oh, right.
That's about it. But that ain't going to be on my top 10 list.
It's oh, about yes, it a will
sandwich.
Be.
It's like getting a sandwich out of a box. Number eight. So I watched Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers on Disney Plus. It's one of those things where I'm watching it and I'm just like, this is probably about as good of a Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers movie you could make. But there really doesn't feel like much sincerity there. It just feels like clever in capital letters and underlined, and it's like, can you believe that we are doing a Who Framed Roger Rabbit with Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers? And like, let's throw in these cameos and pop culture references and stuff. And sure, like there's ones that hit every once in a while. Like there's this whole subplot about like characters getting kidnapped so that like they can be altered and like put into bootleg movies. Okay. So like instead of Lady and the Tramp, they'll take like Lady and Tramp and then like kind of change around their characterization, and then they'll put like the title Spaghetti Dogs on the end there. Nice. And it's like, okay, it's funny every once in a while.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I just like have no tolerance anymore for like meta commentary.
Sure.
Or like references, or it's just like I just want some sincerity,
right,
finally,
right,
in these,
right,
movies. Like I was talking to Rob yesterday, and I was like, my frame of reference with Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers was like, it was on when I was, you know, the right age. I was about like 7 or 8 when it was on Disney Channel. And I used to watch those like Disney afternoon shows. I don't remember like a single episode of like anything that happened in any of them. But I remember like going to Disney World, and then I would be in like the World of Disney like gift shop at, right, the end of the day. And then my parents were like, yeah, you could pick out like a plushie that you want as like a souvenir. So I picked up, like, I had Chip and I had Dale.
Uh-oh.
I was just like, I don't know which
one. Sophie's choice.
So I'm like, I don't know which one. So I picked one of them, and then I went up to, like, the counter, and then my dad was just like, what are you doing? You can't split them up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, this is the Disney magic. This is, like, this should be a commercial. So, like, just kind of, I never approached that show with, like, anything more than just, like, kid enthusiasm. So, like, to see it sort of, like, conceived as like this lonely island like snark fest,
mm-hmm,
just bums me out.
Okay.
Okay, so I don't know. I know a lot of people like it, but a lot of people like too many movies these days. Like that, like I'm gonna get on my soapbox for a second. Like,
all right, let's have it.
Too many. You can't say a movie's your favorite movie or the best movie you've ever seen if,
yeah,
you just saw it.
Right.
You can't do that.
I've seen that for a few movies this year.
Yeah, you can't do that. You can't see a movie that's clearly a 2.5-star movie and say it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that anymore, because,
okay,
you do that with, and this is the collective view, you do that with every movie. So I don't believe you on anything,
yeah,
anymore. It's just like, there's, it's just like nonstop 2.5-star movies. And I'm just like, what are people drinking? And like what you like, but like, don't say it out loud. Like, just leave it to yourself.
Is it the need to say something on social media? Is it the desire to be quoted? What is it, do you think?
But these people, like, some of the people who do this are not in the position to be quoted.
Okay.
So, like, unless there's...
Well, now they just quote random people on Twitter.
This is
like...
true. This is true. I don't know. I just...
Boba Fett fan 2972 says Chippendale Rescue Rangers is a laugh riot. L-A-F-F.
Yes. Yes. I don't know. It's like... Or I like when... You know, they'll show like an ad for the Northmen, and it's just like gnarly as fuck. And I'm just like, this is where we're at now. Gnarly as fuck.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to always say like, hey, it's cool that, you know, if you don't like something, but everybody else loves it, because you can't be invited to every party.
Sure.
That was my thing.
Right.
But now it's like, I'm not invited to any of these parties. And like, I'm just kind of like, all right. I didn't want to go to your party anyway.
I think it's that you've been to too many parties, and you're,
yeah,
just like, oh, I've been to that party. I don't need to go again. And everybody's like, this is the best party ever. I'm here.
Yeah, yeah. And they're just like, let's play Fortnite. And I'm just like, that's put on music.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
Not a party.
Right.
So I don't know. And then I saw Men, which is like 2/3 of a pretty good movie.
Okay.
And then completely shits the bed in the last third.
Sweet.
Jesse Buckley's really good. Rory Kinnear is pretty good.
It's got, is it gnarly as fuck, would you say?
It's gnarly. I mean, it wants to be gnarly as fuck. It's another one of those movies like Goodnight Mommy or whatever. We saw it. It's not like, well, the reason why I'm bringing that up is like, I remember we saw that. It was like me, you, Erica, and I think Elric were.
That was The Lodge.
That was The Lodge. Okay.
But,
and
know,
I think I was
same
talking
difference.
About, I was talking about,
right,
yeah, it was The Lodge. So, like, I watched it, and I was, like, just livid of, like, seeing another A24, like,
right,
you know, glacial movie. And I'm just like, oh, you're so, like, you're going to burn in my memory. It's so going to bother me. It's just
gnarly,
like,
as fuck.
It's like, I'm going to get over this by the time I get to my car. Like, fuck you. Like, this is nonsense. And, like, Men is sort of like that, where I'm just like, give me a fucking break already. So, I don't know. I mean... It's pretty good.
2.5 stars.
2.5 stars. That's like where I'm at right now. I wanted it to be, not that I needed it to be, but I was like, you know, I loved Annihilation. It was my second favorite movie that year. And this, I think unlike Annihilation, where once it starts revealing its mysteries, it just gets more intriguing and more mysterious and creepy and kind of, you know, doomsday-ish. This one is just like, I just kind of like threw up my hands. I'm just like, I'm just watching stuff. Like, you could do anything and like, I would have no, this would have no effect on me one way or the other. So, men, everybody.
I'm looking forward to that third act reveal when it turns out they're on the planet Yelnap.
That would actually have been Zeiss. Better than what we got.
Right? Is that Highlander 2? Isn't it Zeiss?
Something like that. Yeah. Ooh, Zeiss. Aliens on Zeiss. Yeah, not enough quickenings in movies anymore.
No.
Like, that shit, I mean, that's just cool. I just want some quickenings. And then I watched, like, a bunch of older stuff.
Okay.
And this just kind of, you know, will firmly supplant my position as old fuddy-duddy of the show. Because, like,
sure.
I watch anything that's over, like, 15 years old. I'm like, this is movies. These are good.
I had that experience. Yeah. I've been watching a lot of older stuff. And then yesterday I watched, like, two newer movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hated the way they looked, even. I was like, I missed stuff being shot on film. I missed actual cinematography. I was definitely in that mindset yesterday.
Yeah. Like I watched a god-awful transfer of City by the Sea on Amazon Prime because I'm going through like 2002 movies now. And the only other time I ever saw City by the Sea was like when I was in and out of consciousness in a hospital bed.
Ah.
Because I just had surgery and like I was in the room and I was watching TV and City by the Sea was on and it was like edited for TV on AMC. So this was my big chance of watching it like as Michael Caton Jones created it or intended. And it's totally fine, but like I like that it's just this cop melodrama.
Right.
It's very much like a movie that would be like the B picture on like a double feature from like 1963. It's just like it could have been in black and white. It's it's good. So it was fine. I like you at first think that De Niro is just kind of, you know, this aging detective, but then it's like one of those, you know, you should know better than like every De Niro performance has like another layer beneath it where it's like, oh, he's kind of a creep too, and like, but he's sort of trying to make amends for like all the things that he did bad in his life and stuff like that. And I don't know, James Franco's in it and he looks like he's like going super method. He might as well just have like stink lines drawn around him. Like he's just like this boardwalk wanderer guy. But I don't know, for what it was fine. Yeah. William Forsythe has a mullet and plays a guy named Spider.
Oh my gosh. I saw it opening weekend in 2002 and haven't seen it since. So
yeah. So I watched that. I watched Elizabethtown again.
Yes.
Because I've been listening to old Blank Check episodes I haven't listened to. And for some reason, the ones I gravitate to are the ones that are like disasters for the directors.
Yeah.
So like I listened to Aloha and then I listened to Elizabethtown. And
do
I
they
was...
have anything good to say about Aloha?
No.
Is there
really
anything good to say about Aloha?
The trailer's good.
Is it? Okay. I don't even remember the trailer.
It's got a good song in the trailer too.
Okay.
It's got pretty people in it.
Sure.
It's not a good movie.
No.
It's like one of the biggest catastrophes I've seen in a theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Elizabethtown, I also thought was one of the biggest catastrophes I had ever seen in a theater when I saw it. And I hadn't seen it since fall of 2005. And then it was on Paramount Plus, which I'm subscribed to for like a month. So I'm just like trying to get the value out of it that I can.
Right.
I'm like, all right, I'll watch Elizabethtown again. And like, I don't know what happened. That movie's the same movie I saw in 05, but like it's just being offness is like mesmerizing.
Okay.
I just couldn't look away. Like Orlando Bloom is so bad in it.
Yeah.
Like so bad.
And it was supposed to be Ashton Kutcher, right?
Yeah.
And then he got fired?
Because him and Dunst apparently didn't have chemistry.
Oh.
Which is like, it's like you probably fired the wrong guy.
it's
like
possible.
It probably was better than what you got, but like I don't know, like Orlando, like Griffin Newman described him as basically like using the dialect of like Thomas the Tank Engine when he's like explaining something like in a children's special. And it's just sort of like, yeah, that is exactly like the tone of voice that he chooses. But I don't know. I find it so interesting because it's, there is this theory that Roger Ebert had that Kirsten Dunst's character is really an angel and she's not a stewardess or flight attendant.
No.
It makes more sense plot-wise if she
were probably,
an angel.
But it's not in the movie.
But I think it's
You can't just make that shit up.
But two things. One is if she's like Clarence in It's a Wonderful Life, it's like, what are the... Like... What is the sense of decorum if you're an angel assigned to somebody or like of fucking them? Like,
oh,
it's like fucked by an angel.
Did Clarence fuck Jimmy Stewart and It's a Wonderful Life?
Well, pretty sure he did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think in the non-black and white version he does.
Like the Ted Turner colorized one? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, okay. Because like,
they added back in the graphic scenes of Clarence fucking Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, because it's just like, it's not just the picture that's not in black and white anymore. I remember that was the big push for it. I'm just like, oh, like, stuff happened. But like the whole thing where she's a flight attendant, so she like has traveled the world, obviously, but in a plane. So like, how did she know to map out this entire road trip for him with knowing what stops he was going to make when and timing it to music and everything? Ugh. And it's so weird because she's just like, stop here for the world's best chili. Around the corner is where Martin Luther King got assassinated. It's just like all over. And that's like,
in the name of love.
And that's basically like the movie in a nutshell. It's just like, it's like, Susan Sarandon wants to tap dance. You're going to stab yourself with a knife on a bicycle. It's like, what is happening? And I wish more movies were like, it makes you feel more human to watch a movie where somebody fucks up at work that bad.
Okay.
It's invigorating. You know?
All right. All of his movies are about like professional meltdowns, though. And he's made better movies about professional meltdowns.
Oh, I'm not saying it's his one
it's
of
John
his
Mahoney
best.
And Say Anything. It's Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, I'm not. Oh, by no means am I saying this is one of his best.
Campbell Scott and Singles, right, with his Super Train.
We bought a zoo.
He buys a zoo.
Yeah.
Aloha, obviously about a professional meltdown.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I watched Femme Fatale for the first time.
Yes.
Which is really great.
Yes, it is.
I didn't know, like,
what a movie could be.
I didn't know how I felt about it for a while. And then it kind of all came together, like, around the third act.
Okay.
Where I'm just like, this is so, like, such a weird cocktail of a movie. Because it's, like, what you expect out of a De Palma movie, but, like, amped up to 11. So if you're a fan of that, then it's, like, all there for you. But it's also, like, oddly sweet in certain ways.
Okay.
Towards the end. Like with her kind of rescuing her doppelganger and everything like that. But then it's got like this weird, like acidic, like De Palma touch at the end where like, you know how she gives that little totem to like the truck driver and he hangs it on his rear view mirror and everything like that.
Right.
So there's an accident which basically ruins this guy's life. Like it has to ruin his life, or at least he'll get fired from his job, or like he'll be in like lawsuits and everything like that. And it kind of just ends where it's just like, well, that worked out for everybody. And it's just like, but what about this guy? He seems so nice.
He's
gave her
not
a ride.
Important. He's actually an angel.
Yeah.
So he's fine.
Okay.
He's going to fuck Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah. Well, who wouldn't?
Oh gosh.
Oh geez.
I made Jimmy Stewart into Goofy.
Yeah.
Gorsh.
Oh, man.
Put this on, Kim Novak. Gorsh, you look just like my dead girlfriend.
Hey, Fievel, let's go west.
Yep, that's where we go. We go vertigo to Fievel goes west.
Yeah. I was born in 1982. My first touchdown was definitely 1991's An American Tale. Fievel goes west. And I saw The Gift for the first time.
Oh, yes.
And The Gift is like, it's like the, what do you call it? like the vanilla pudding of movies.
It's a 2.5-star movie. It's a tapioca. It's a 2.5-star movie.
Yeah.
I would argue elevated to a 3-star movie because of the cast.
Sure.
And the Sam Raimi's involvement. But
yeah.
It's not great.
It's like the perfect
movie. I want it
to
be better than it is.
Yeah, it's like a good movie to watch like on Sunday at 6 p.m.
Sure.
And then it's just like, okay.
Yeah.
Got that off the list.
Yeah.
And then the last one is...
What did you think about Giovanni Ribisi in The Gift?
I'm this is like my Ribisi season because I'm watching The Offer.
Ribisi season.
And he's just like... He's like, fuck.
Who is he on The Offer?
He's Frank Colombo. I think it's Frank Colombo. The last name's Colombo. But he's like a mafia guy in New York. And at first he under pressure from Frank Sinatra, like, is there to stop the movie from being made. And then, like, things happen where, like, he eventually becomes, like, a big cheerleader for the movie. And then there's entanglements because, like, Paramount and Gulf and Western don't want to be, you know, looked at as being in bed with the mafia with the production of their movie and everything like that. So the movie, I think that show is probably like 98% bullshit, but it's very entertaining.
Okay.
But yeah, Ribisi and The Gift is a little bit much. It's not my favorite. It's not my favorite Ribisi.
He goes full Ribisi in that movie.
He sure does. Yeah. Yeah. He, and the character makes, like, absolutely no sense, especially where, like, it kind of wraps up his story.
He's Duddits.
He is Duddits. Teach me how to Duddits. Yeah, and then the last one I watched was, I finished off a, like, 1 week long in between movie one and movie two double feature of Katie Holmes movies.
Okay.
Because I watched Disturbing Behavior again.
Okay.
Morning. That movie's, like, such a mess. And it's like 82 minutes.
Yeah.
And apparently they like cut it down from like 115 minutes.
Yeah.
And it definitely feels that way, but like just as kind of a nostalgia piece from like, you know, when I was in high school and everything, just like with the fashion and the music and things like that, I still had fun with it. Nick
Meet
Stahl
the musical little children who live amongst the flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nick Stahl bothers me a lot.
Does he ever not bother you a lot?
No. I remember I went. My mom and I, like, this was back in the early 2000s when, like, we still thought the Oscars kind of mattered a bit.
Mm.
So we were always like, well, let's catch up on, like, the Best Picture nominees we haven't
right.
seen. So I remember we went to see In the Bedroom, which is, like, the worst movie you could ever watch with your mom. And I remember, like, Nick Stahl gets dropped.
Yeah.
And we were like, we're going to California Pizza Kitchen after this. Like... We need to change the mood around a little bit.
Yeah.
So, like, her and I were like, okay, well, what else is playing in this theater? And next door was, like, the barely theatrical, like, should-have-been-straight-to-video, like, Peter Pan sequel called, like, Return to Neverland.
Okay.
And we watched, like, the end of that, and then we went and had, like, pizza. And it's just, like, you're trying to eat, like, buffalo chicken pizza while you... thinking about somebody getting shot in the face.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, not great.
No.
The proximity of the California Pizza Kitchen with the movie theater I saw that at is a problem because I also had this with Boys Don't Cry where I saw Don't Cry and I'm just like, fuck, I can't.
Do you just associate pineapple pizza with tragedy now?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, indie tragedy / pineapple pizza. So, yeah.
It's a total pineapple pizza movie.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, God, this is so pineapple pizza.
Wait, what was I going to say? Oh, Disturbing Behavior was like one of those first DVDs that I bought that had like a ton of deleted scenes on the disc where you can like almost see this is the movie that they tried to make. And it was like a fascinating case study for that.
It was a real bounce situation.
It was. It was a real joyride.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got some good songs in it.
Sure.
I like Harvey Danger.
Paranoia.
I like Got You Where I Want You.
Sure.
By the Flies.
Yeah. That's it.
William Sadler's in it.
I don't even remember that.
He plays like a janitor who's playing possum and pretending to be dumb, but he's like really on to what's going on.
He's pretending to be Ribisi.
He is. Yeah, it definitely is like a Ribisi sibling.
But he's a regular. He's a real sneaky Pete.
Yeah, he is very much a sneaky Pete. TM. And then... Bruce Greenwood shows up. He's like the evil scientist guy.
Sure, yeah.
I just like that Bruce Greenwood. Every time he shows up in a movie, I'm just like, oh, this movie's better for it.
It's good.
Bruce Greenwood. Yeah.
I still haven't seen 13 Days.
Yeah, it's a good one.
That's
good Greenwood.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What can I talk about? We watched Senior Year on Netflix.
Is that like a National Lampoon movie?
There is a National Lampoon Senior Trip.
Oh.
But no, Senior Year is the Rebel Wilson movie where she falls out of a cheerleading pyramid in like 1999 and goes into a coma and wakes up 20 years later.
Okay.
But then goes back to school. It's 8 movies, by the way. She goes back to school like Billy Madison.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to be prom queen. She joins the cheerleaders. They're sort of like an attempt at a joke that she doesn't understand that like the world is different now and you can't, you know, she tries to call somebody something gay as a pejorative or something. And they're like, well, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And it's almost an observational humor situation, but trust me, it never gets there. You really got to love Rebel Wilson to dial into Senior Year. So this was not the movie for me.
This was Netflix?
Yes.
Was it directed by anybody?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
It was really not good. It's definitely one of my least favorite movies that I've seen this year so far. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
A couple better movies that we watched. Yesterday we watched like 3 movies, or we finished one from Friday, and that's One Day Since Yesterday, which is the documentary about Peter Bogdanovich making They All Laughed.
Okay.
I've been watching a lot of Peter Bogdanovich movies, both deliberately and not deliberately, since he passed away, because I realized he was a little bit of a blind spot for me.
Yeah, same here. I watched Paper Moon and Last Picture Show for the first time.
I still have to see Paper Moon. That's on Prime, and I haven't watched it yet.
It's great.
Yeah, that's the reaction I've had to several of his movies that I hadn't seen.
Yeah.
And I think because Paper Moon is just sitting there on Prime, I'm like, I'll get to it.
Yeah.
So I've watched some lesser Bogdanovich for some reason, but
you're like, I'll rent the ones that I don't.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like there's nothing worse than like giving me access to something where I'm just like, well, now I can put it off forever.
So it's mostly about the making of They All Laughed, which I just seen maybe a month or two ago. But it puts a lot of his career into perspective, and it talks about the murder of Dorothy Stratton and like. It's very sad, but there's a lot of cool talking heads. Jeff Bridges and Wes Anderson and Quentin Tarantino are all interviewed. The interviews are bad because nobody's mic'd, so they're just sitting in like echoey rooms.
Oh, geez.
I'm not sure why they chose to do that as a documentary stylistic choice, but it's good. I really recommend it. And then when that was done, I was in the mood because they wrap it up talking about what ended up being his last movie, or at least his last narrative feature, which is from 2014 called She's Funny That Way.
Okay.
So I'm like, well, let's watch She's Funny That Way. I've never seen it, and I'm interested in checking it out. And it's not great. It's very reminiscent, as Erica pointed out, of like late period Woody Allen in terms of like he casts a young starlet. Woody Allen would have cast Scarlett Johansson. Bogdanovich casts Imogen Poots, who's doing a version of a Brooklyn accent the whole movie that is not like anything I've ever heard a real person from Brooklyn sounding like.
Okay.
Owen Wilson. Yeah, no. Yeah. Owen Wilson, Will Forte, Catherine Hahn, Jennifer Aniston.
Mm.
It was fun after watching all these Bogdanovich movies and watching the documentary. It was kind of fun because it's a little bit of like a victory lap because he pulls in a bunch of people from past movies and has them do little like cameos and stuff. Tatum O'Neill plays a waitress and Colleen Camp shows up. And, and so that part's kind of fun. But like the movie itself is decidedly not great.
Okay. Well, these guys get old.
Right.
They downshift a lot of them. Yeah.
And then the last one I'll talk about is a movie that Rob reviewed a few weeks ago and really put on my radar, and that's Duel.
The movie from
Riley Stearns, starring Karen Gillan. I almost don't want to describe the plot because I'm advising people to go into it blind, and unfortunately the one-line summary on Amazon when you rent it there gives away 2/3 of the movie.
Oh.
Karen Gillan's really good. It's Erica kept turning to me and saying the whole movie, like, is she supposed to be a robot? And I kept saying, no, it's just a stylistic thing that he's doing. He's doing kind of a Yorgos Lanthimos thing where
I'm into it.
Nobody speaks in contractions and everybody's very deadpan. And I remember The Art of Self-Defense being kind of like that.
Yeah.
But you chalk it up to like, well, it's Jesse Eisenberg and that's just how he acts.
Yeah.
But he's definitely doing it here too. Really interesting premise. The longer it went, the more involved I found myself getting. Goes to some places that I wasn't expecting it to go. I don't know if I love the resolution, but I have to live with it for a little while, I think, before I can decide. But definitely one of the better movies I've seen this year.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still need to see it. It's funny when you bring up The Art of Self-Defense, like, just recently I was at like the gym that I go to, and I was talking about The Art of Self-Defense to like my trainer, because he likes movies, but he's a lot younger than me and he hasn't seen a lot of them. So for some reason we got on that topic, and then I was explaining Night Class to him, and he kind of was just like, what? Get on the bikes, bro.
I remember seeing that as part of the Chicago Critics Film Festival, and like the reveal of what Night Class was, I just thought was so funny.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie since then, but I really liked it.
Yeah. I saw it at like Randhurst, and it was like me and like three other people, and we were all like definitely attuned to what was going on. Yeah. And I'm like, we're the hippest people in Mount Prospect.
That's where I saw, what's the one, the Daniels movie?
Swiss Army Man,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Which I did not like. But
I saw that with my mom, too.
Definitely wanted me to feel like the hippest person in the room, because that's how the Daniels do.
Oh, the Daniels.
Sorry, just Daniels.
Oh,
it's even worse than the Daniels.
I don't know. Like, all right. Everybody loves everything everywhere all at once. But, like, when I was watching that movie, like, by the time they got to the thing where it's, like, it's a donut and it like means all this stuff and it's like this metaphor thing.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I've seen the donut analogy in 38,000 indie movies. I'm done.
Yeah.
Like none of this is seeping through anymore. I don't know. Like what you like. Just don't tell me about it.
Let's talk about The Devil's Advocate.
Yeah.
I'm excited to talk about this movie.
What made you choose this one?
This was a request that we got from one William Lanham. He said that would make a good show, and I was like, that absolutely would make a good show.
Yeah,
so
this one's for you, man.
Yeah, yeah. 1997, Keanu Reeves, Al Pacino. Weirdly doesn't bury the lead that the whole movie is about the son of the devil.
Yeah.
It's not pulling some angel heart shit.
Mm-hmm.
But it still acts like it's a twist when it gets there at the end, which I'm fascinated by. Because you called your movie The Devil's Advocate, and all of your marketing is Al Pacino is the devil.
Yeah, it's like his name's Milton and everything. Right? It's like not hiding much at all.
No. But I tweeted out yesterday that Hollywood rarely makes A-list trash.
Oh, is this trash? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not trash in air quotes. Like, Hollywood produced Wild Things, and I like Wild Things, but Wild Things is trash kind of in air quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Wild Things is very self-aware trash.
Yeah.
Is The Devil's Advocate self-aware trash? I'm not positive.
I don't know. Maybe when we talk about it more, I'll have an answer, like, towards the end. But I think the movie's sleazier than a lot of studio movies are.
Yeah.
Especially for that time
period.
Now
they would call it horny.
Yeah.
By the way, stop calling movies horny.
Yeah, and stop putting nudity in movies and sex.
Yeah.
Who needs it? It doesn't drive the plot.
No, ew.
Yeah.
Ew. Except for in this movie where it clearly does drive the plot.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I need you to fuck my daughter.
I need to log this in Wikipedia.
Have sex with your sister. I'm going to cook.
Something like it hot.
Is cuck a verb? I don't know.
I don't know.
I think it's a no.
I don't know. This movie felt like to me. I was not ready for that. This movie feels like to me like Taylor Hackford and like Dan Gilroy. Or is it Tony Gilroy or
Ooh,
Dan
good
Gilroy?
Question.
I can't remember. It's one of the Gilroys who co-wrote it.
It's definitely a Gilroy.
He co-wrote. There's like two credited. Tony, okay.
Jonathan Lemkin and Tony Gilroy.
Okay. So it reminds me of like creatives at a high level at working on a studio movie get together. They get the green light. They're putting it all together. Like, you know, what's going to happen in the movie? What fucked up shit is going to happen in The Devil's Advocate? And it's like they're maybe drawing from real life a little bit too much, where okay. they're just like, like these guys have like dark sides to them a little bit, and like they're kind of like drawing that out a little bit. Like, this is normal, right? You know, hooking up with Monica Keena if she's your stepdaughter, you know, that's normal, right? It's like they're telling on themselves a little
right,
bit.
Okay,
so like
sure.
that's what I feel like with this movie, where it's like maybe just a little bit kind of more tawdry than usual.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Not so much now, because I think I'm just kind of desensitized to the movie. But like, it definitely in like 98 or whatever, when I saw it on video, like it felt kind of dangerous in a way.
Okay.
Now I think it's just kind of more silly.
Yes.
But but at the time, I don't know why I'm misremembering this, but I remember like things in the movie like really kind of unsettled me. Like, and one thing that I was convinced unsettled me is not in the movie, which is weird. So, like, I remember thinking, you know, they have, like, the epilogue, and then it goes into the end credits and everything like that. And I remembered the end credits. It was over painted black by the Rolling Stones. But I remember the credits were, like, I was like, these are moving too fast. Like, the credits aren't at, like, 1x speed. They're at, like, 2.5x speed.
Did you watch it maybe on cable?
Maybe. Because
they could have run them fast on cable. They do that sometimes.
But it was weird because it was like, I watched the climax of this movie, and then I like, you know, it kind of lands where it lands. And then I was just like, these credits are going too fast. Like, something's Beelzebub.
I cast you out, Satan.
I'm like,
slow down, credits.
I'm like, danger, danger, danger. So I don't know. But like, yeah, I definitely felt that way in terms of roundabout way to answer your question.
Watch how fast these credits are going to roll.
I think the movie probably knows that it's trashy, and like the cast and the writers and the creatives behind it are leaning into it.
I kind of think so, too. Mike, a couple weeks ago, we did a show on The Spy Who Loved Me, and he brought up this phenomenon that he does not like, wherein something is maybe bad in a movie, like an actor gives a bad performance or a director makes a questionable choice, and people make excuses for it by saying, like, well, they meant for it to be bad, or they meant for it to be like that.
Yeah.
And so I'm watching this movie, and I'm like, does Taylor Hackford know the movie he's making? Because I look at the rest of his filmography, and it's like,
I wrote
fine.
It down.
Yeah, it's a lot of like C's and B's, you know?
Yeah. It's like the types of movies that you would expect Taylor Hackford to make. Like, it's it's like journeyman director list.
Devil's Advocate might be my favorite Taylor Hackford movie.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen... I'm going to watch Dolores Claiborne soon.
Ooh, that movie's awesome. All right, I take it back.
But I've seen, like, a lot of his bad ones.
Okay, what are the bad ones? I mean, let's get into it.
All right, I'm just going to go through the whole list.
Yeah. So,
his first movie was Teenage Father, which I've never heard of or seen.
No.
The Idolmaker was next, which I've heard is good, but I never watched. An Officer and a Gentleman was not good.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that movie.
I've never seen Against All Odds.
It's okay, like, as a 80s remake of Out of the Past, but it's not great, you know,
it's got the good song in it.
Oh, don't talk to me about that song. It makes me cry in a Marcus Addison.
Did you ever watch American Idol, like, in the early 2000s?
Yes, way too much.
Do you remember that guy who sang Against All Odds, and, like, when he said, and take a look at me now, he took off his glasses, and then everybody cheered?
No, but you do.
And one of the judges was just like, what was that? like Paula Abdul was just like, that was so powerful. And I forget, I think it had to have been Simon Cowell, where he's just like, what, that was the corniest thing I've ever seen. But and then White Knights was next,
which I haven't seen.
I haven't seen. No. Hail Hail Rock and Roll, the Chuck Berry documentary.
I didn't know he made that.
I have never seen it, but that's one of the early, like, I'm five and I see this poster and it's like, ooh, look how neon it is. Everybody's All American, I've never seen.
Yeah.
Blood In, Blood Out, I've not seen.
That seems like a movie you would totally see.
Blood In, Blood Out?
What movie am I confusing it with?
I don't know.
Is it a Dacascos movie? What movie am I confusing?
Only the Strong?
Yeah, that's totally what I'm confusing it with.
Dolores Claiborne.
Dolores Claiborne's really good.
I've seen The Devil's Advocate. Proof of Life is not good.
No.
Ray, I haven't seen since like 05,
Ray
probably.
Can go fuck itself.
Yeah, so I liked it at the time, but I don't think it would hold up.
It's not good.
Love Ranch, I never saw.
Nope.
Parker, I never saw.
Parker is a fucking crazy movie. Like, okay. That's six movies in one, and none of them are very good.
Okay, and then his most recent movie was The Comedian, which is one of the worst Robert De Niro movies I've ever seen. And, like, he plays a stand-up comic, and it's just, like when an actor goes too method, and you're just like, what the fuck is this? And it's just, like, 2 hours long, and oh, my God.
Better or worse than Dirty Grandpa?
Better.
Oh, okay.
I mean, well, no, it's worse. I don't know. It's a real Sophie's choice.
Yeah,
at least Dirty Grandpa has, like, Aubrey Plaza in it, so, like, that's distracting enough. But, The Comedian is, like, he goes to, like, an old age home, and he's, like, doing, like, punchlines about poopy pants and stuff like that. And he's, like, saying,
I got some poopy pants!
He's just like, who wants to shit in comedy? Let me laugh till you poop.
Check me out! I got poop in my pants!
What if I pooped already? How will I know it's from the jokes?
Do they use Paint It Black at the end of this movie because they wanted to use Sympathy for the Devil, and somebody said, like, no, that's been done. Interview with the Vampire already did that.
We're saving it for Cruella.
A lot of movies have already done Sympathy for the Devil, so let's choose a different Rolling Stone song. Because Paint It Black has nothing to do, really, with...
I mean, he kind of wants to paint Kevin Lomax black figuratively.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
He wants to turn him.
Right.
Into, you know.
Son of the devil.
Yeah. Which, I don't blame him. I mean, like, why wouldn't you want him managing your law firm, especially when the guy currently doing the stuff is Jeffrey Jones?
Right.
It's like, clearly it's
about whom the less said, the better. But...
Yeah, I don't want to go into that at all.
No, I don't
either. But this... I don't know, like, this movie touches on a lot of things that I do enjoy, and it's kind of nice that it's sort of, like, in this movie stew together. I mean, movie stew. You are listening to the movie stew.
Oh, welcome back to movie stew. Yeah.
A dash of films.
We did.
A dash of friendship. It's a movie stew. If you come in early, we'll let you have a taste of some movie stew. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Movie Stew. My name's Stu.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm here with Patrick, and we're going to talk about our movie.
A dash of films, a dash of friendship. Movie Stew. Is Movie Stew STU? I mean, I know Stu is STU, the host of Movie Stew, but is the name of the show STU also? Is it like a play on words?
It's STU.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like it.
Yeah. We're having Stu on. We're just going to be talking about Stuart Pankin movies.
Oh, very nice. I just saw him show up in something, but I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, I see him in my dreams every night.
Now I'm dying to know what I just saw Stuart Pankin show
but
up.
But he's always like, Adam, you got to wake up. And I'm just like,
let me sleep, Stuart Pankin.
Oh, my God.
I'm looking up what I just saw Stuart Pankin in.
Yeah.
It was not Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves.
Was it Second Sight?
No, because I didn't watch that recently.
Yeah.
Was
it Congo?
No, because we did a show on that a while ago, and that was the last time I saw it. I don't know. I'll find it while we're talking, but... Boy, he works a lot.
Yeah.
This is going to take way too long.
No, but I do like that in the movie, Stu, there's, you know, it's a lawyer movie. It's like
which
a
Which I like. I have to admit, I'm a fan of the legal drama.
I love the bits in legal dramas where it's like the hotshot young attorney and like these getting recruited.
Yeah.
And they're going through all the perks that he gets.
Right.
Although the firm does this a lot better than Devil's Advocate, because the Devil's Advocate, it's just basically like you get a big apartment and then you have to go to all the work parties.
Right.
And I'm just like, you didn't even get a car.
You don't need a car. It's New York.
Yeah, but like, you know, if you're going to be like recruited by a law office, like you should get a car.
Yeah.
Or like some fun.
Apparently he's making so much money they can't even speak the number.
Yes. Yes. Also, I do like there's, you know, bits where this is one of my favorite tropes in movies where it's two guys who like clearly don't go to boxing matches very often go. And then they're just like, yeah, kill him. I just think it's so funny because it's so like performative where it's like actors where they're just like, what do people do at boxing matches?
All right. So we got to talk about some stuff here because I think one of the things that we really need to address is the Keanu Reeves of it all.
Okay.
Okay. I love Keanu Reeves. I always have.
Yeah.
I think Keanu Reeves is a really good actor.
Yeah.
I think this finds him at a weird point in his career.
Okay.
Where he doesn't totally know who I think he still doesn't know who he wants to be as an adult actor.
Okay.
As a teen actor, he had a number of really good roles in River's Edge and Permanent Record and the Bill and Ted movies, Parenthood.
Yeah.
He had a lot of really good, like, I'm sort of the slacker young man. He's aged into a type where he's very comfortable with who he is and he knows exactly who he wants to be on screen. And he's always really good and really solid, has a lot of like weight to him.
Yeah.
97, he's still a little bit like, I don't totally know who I want to be. And I don't know if it's a factor of him acting opposite Pacino and just like fucking going hard. Like he goes so hard in this movie.
Yeah.
But so does everyone. So is it just everyone matching each other's energy? Because I watched that boxing scene and I'm like, maybe dial it back, Keanu. But he does that a lot. I mean, he's so intense in every frame of this movie from the very opening when he goes into the bathroom and does that like creepy smile into the mirror. That. Oh, yeah. It's great.
Yeah, I like that.
It's not all bad. I'm not saying he's bad in this movie. I don't think he's bad in this movie. But I think he's like going for it in a way that I haven't seen him really do in any other movie.
It's definitely like the most Paul Walker Running Scared performance of
that's a good way to put it.
He is going for it.
So hard.
I think he's really good in this. And like,
he's super entertaining.
I don't know. I think it's another case where, and I'm not saying this is your criticism, but I think it's another one where a lot of people kind of wrote it off because he's not nailing a dialect.
Right.
But I think that
does anyone in this movie, though? I mean, even Charlize Theron, who's a great actor.
Sure.
Is doing a soap opera Florida dialect.
Yeah.
Not a very accurate Southern dialect.
Yeah. I don't know. I think she's the MVP of the movie for me.
She is for me, too. And even in 97, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, there's the movie, and then there's whatever Charlize Theron is doing.
That's like, that's the movie I'm more interested in.
Yeah.
Because, like, when I was talking about, like, the ingredients of the movie stew, there's the lawyer stuff. But then I also really love the Rosemary's Baby repulsion, like, woman on the edge of madness type of thing. And I almost would rather, like, follow that through.
Okay.
As opposed to sort of, you know, because, like, I think, you know, Keanu Reeves is seduced very early on. Yeah. And it's, like, basically he's just, like, punching the clock the rest of the time. And it's, like, sure, okay. But, I don't know, like, on the margins, like, all this stuff going on with her is, like, really unsettling and interesting. So, I don't know. But, yeah, for me with Reeves, it's, like, I don't know. I kind of buy into he's like this A-type personality, which I think is maybe a stretch for him kind of as an actor because he's more, and I don't mean this in a negative way, he's more relaxed. He's more casual as an actor. He's kind of got like a mellow energy. You know, sometimes it makes it charming like in movies like Point Break or like in Devil's Advocate where he's like really going hard and stuff like that. It's like easy to rally around that. So, I do like kind of, you know, he's almost like this competitive athlete where it's like, I've never lost a case and everything like that. And I have to
I'm a
kind
lawyer.
Of, yeah,
I that's win. What that's I what I do. I'm a lawyer.
Yeah.
He says lawyer weird.
Yeah.
Lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the way he hits the L on his tongue.
Yeah, I don't know. And then I think, too, just kind of his innate, like, you know, likability and kind of goodness that you kind of get from him is an asset to the movie, because I think that if it was like James Spader playing Kevin Lomax, then like,
oh, he's already the devil.
You might not feel the sense of tragedy of the situation. No. So you know what I mean? You know what
James
I mean?
Spader simply feels fulfilled by finding out he's the son of the devil.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, but like, I think that there's a certain amount of innocence that really kind of works to this movie's advantage because you have Kevin or you have Keanu Reeves cast as that part.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was watching it yesterday, just really noticing how, and this is post Scent of a Woman for Al Pacino. So I think this is where he's really like settled into a lot of his bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
And it works for this character, and of course he gets to be over the top, and he lends this movie so much of its trashiness.
Yeah.
He's literally looking at the camera just like, ain't I a stinker?
Yeah, like with the holy water and stuff like that.
Jeez. It's just like The Godfather, see? We're bringing it back to The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
But part of me feels like everybody just felt like they're boxing a heavyweight, and they have to bring it so hard, because even the crazier Charlize gets, the more I think over the top her acting gets.
Yeah.
To the point where she is pretty out there by the time she leaves the movie, you know. But I remember, so she you know, she makes 2 days in the Valley, and it's a real like, holy shit, who is that kind of performance?
Yeah.
And then her 97 is huge because she makes this and her other big 97 movie, Trial and Error, baby, which she's awesome in.
Yeah, yeah.
She's the MVP of that movie. She's the MVP of this movie.
Yeah. No, I
and now we have to be excited because, like, now she's in a Marvel movie. So she's arrived. Like, she has a 26-year career of giving incredible performances. She's a Best Actress Oscar winner.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still supposed to be, like, excited that she's joining the MCU.
Yeah. Those movies are for people who aren't that good. I don't mean, like, viewers. I mean, like, the people who are in those movies should be, like, performers who are limited and can't do other better work.
Okay.
Like, I feel like, when I see, like, Charlize Theron show up in, like, Fast and the Furious, I see her, like, show up in the mid-credit scene of the new Doctor Strange movie, I'm just like, this is a movie that, like, you're taking away a much more interesting movie that she could have done.
Because, exactly.
Like, now she's attached to this. Like, I remember I saw an article recently where it was, like, Elizabeth Olsen lost out on, like, I forgot what movie it was. But it was because she was, like, tied into, like, a Marvel contract.
Good, good.
And it's just depressing. Like, and I used to have this.
It's going to be everybody eventually, though. Yeah. Like, it will just swallow all of Hollywood whole.
Yeah. And, I mean, hopefully, like, it bottoms out and, like, then they have to, like, regrow everything. It was encouraging to see, like, one of the guys in charge of Warner Brothers was just like, we need to come out with, like, 25 movies in theaters a year.
Yes,
and it's like, obviously that means, like, you know, it's not going to all be, like, $100 million tentpoles.
No, we're going to get more, like, City by the Seas.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for that.
I am,
more
too.
More Devil's Advocates.
Yeah. Because, like, if you look at, like, a multiplex, like, half the movies are, you know, it's, like, a movie that's been out for a month is on 6 screens still.
Right.
Like,
but you can also stream it at home.
You could also stream it at home, plus like 5 other movies that are like old that you can also stream at home, with like a billion specialty movies that like are just interchangeable and everything like that. So I don't know. Yeah,
I'm not going to the movies much because there's nothing to see.
Right. Yeah, I'm the same like, way. Yeah.
Once I saw Doctor Strange, it's like, well, that's on most of the screens, so what am I going to go, you know, Lost City, I can watch at home, so what am I going to go to the movies for?
That's like next weekend where I'm just like, oh, I want to see Top Gun, and I kind of want to see Bob's Burgers, and I'm just like, maybe I'll do them both in one night. It's like, yeah, but then I can't go to the movies for a month and a half. I have to spread them out.
That's exactly right.
So,
I don't know about Bob's Burgers, because
I've never seen the show either. Like, it just has, like, a weird energy that is appealing to me.
Okay.
Like, in the trailers, it looks like Simpsons the movie, and I'm just like, I could go for another one of those.
That's, the reputation of that movie is that it's very bad.
Of Simpsons
the
movie? I didn't think so. I think it's okay.
My kids watch it a lot, and I'm okay with it, but it has a bad reputation.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't disagree with you that Charlize is like super big, like especially towards the end. But I don't know, like just the thing that I'm charmed by, I guess, by like going back and watching like this or Trial and Error and stuff like that is like I always sort of like
fucking love Trial and Error.
Thought in my head that she was sort of like this ingenue type, and then like she was legitimized by Monster, and then she became this like great actress. But like she was always good.
Yes.
She was always really, really good. And like seeing her be Monster level good in just kind of like a programmer is really nice.
Right.
Like because it pops that much more.
And yet, like on her own, are there successful Charlize Theron vehicles? Like where she's carrying a movie besides Monster.
Which... I could name more movies where she's good in it that she's leading than like good movies she's leading. Like, cause I'm thinking like she's great in Atomic Blonde, but that movie's not good.
It's not great.
I never saw like North Country or like.
Did anyone?
Aeon Flux or any of that.
Oh, I saw Aeon Flux.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm sure.
The Old Guard.
Yeah.
She's good in Bombshell, but like. Bombshell's not a fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to think of, like, there are a number of Charlize Theron attempts at, you know, sort of making her carry a movie as a movie star,
mm-hmm.
and none of them have really taken, which is, again, why I find it a little bit depressing that, like, oh, now she's in the MCU, so now we can be excited about Charlize Theron.
Yeah. I think one other thing that's kind of key to the success of Devil's Advocate for me is like the chemistry that her and Reeves have, because they seem like a winning couple, like at the beginning, and that makes you care about what's going on with them. Like it always makes me happy when I see like further down the road, like two actors reteam. So like, you know,
Sweet November.
I don't care
like...
if Sweet November's good or not, but like just the fact that apparently they liked each other.
Yeah, for sure.
And I especially think that's funny because like in the opening scenes, like they're at a bar in Tallahassee or what, or Gainesville, and he's like biting her on
biting
the butt.
Biting her butt,
and
which he does like, not do in Sweet November.
No.
It should be pointed out.
Yeah, and I'm just like, man, she must have like been having the time of her life with butt bites and like just hanging out with Keanu, where she's just like, man, remember when I got my butt bit? What's that guy doing? Is your schedule clear?
I think everybody likes Keanu who works with him.
Yeah. Well, I it's almost like would be announcing yourself as asshole if like if you're just like, oh God, Keanu.
And then you read those stories, you know, it came out a couple months ago. Like, here's a great opportunity to give Charlize Theron her own movie that she's going to carry that I know is going to be a hit.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to not legitimize her as a movie star, because obviously she's already a movie star, but like. A female-led action movie that will be a success, unlike Atomic Blonde, had they actually cast her in this Furiosa movie, right? Instead of recasting her with Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah.
But you read the stories about her and Tom Hardy and, like, what an asshole and a fuck-up Tom Hardy was and how just, like, super disciplined and professional she is, and it just makes you feel horrible for what she went through on that movie.
Yeah. Now, from everything I've, like, heard about that book... I think Kyle Buchanan wrote.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I got the authors wrong, but was just that George Miller like couldn't convey to like anybody like what he was going for necessarily. So like it felt like a clusterfuck to everyone.
Okay.
And like then when they saw the movie come together, it was like, oh, okay. Like I couldn't see this on set.
Sure.
But I mean, just from like a professional respect aspect, like of everything that this person has achieved, like in their career, you would think that like Tom Hardy would have it in him not to be a dick to fucking Charlize Theron.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't either.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. I want good things for her.
Yeah. No,
she makes something like Long Shot and it's great. It's one of the better romantic comedies of recent years and nobody goes to see it.
That's one thing that I love about her is that, like, she's been in, you know, probably like 50 movies at this point, but then like a movie like Longshot comes around and you're just like, I haven't seen her like this
right
before. Right. So like, or like since maybe Trial and Error and stuff like that. And it's just
it
like,
it all goes back to T&E, baby.
Yeah. And it's just like, this is the movie stew that we talk about. Like, this is what we talk about on Movie Stew. We talk about the stews that we remember.
That's right.
And the stews we'll never forget. So, I mean, this movie has, like, a stacked cast.
Yeah.
Like, that was one great thing about, like, you know, studio movies, like Warner Brothers movies in, like, the 90s. It's just, like, you just have, like, a Delroy Lindo to spare for, like, two scenes.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, immediately captivating. And
right.
It's just, like...
Right.
It's like, there's voodoo in this? Cool. It's
well,
like
it opens little, with yeah. Heather Matarazzo and Frank Sabatka from The Wire. And you're just like, yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on board. Everybody in this movie is good.
Yeah. That guy had a run. It's Chris Bauer.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's just
Isn't
like... he's
Machine.
Machine,
yeah.
Millimeter. He's just like, fine. I'll play a super creep as long as it gets me Machine.
It was funny because Charlie was in the room and I was watching this yesterday. He was out of the room during the sex scene.
Yeah.
And then the second sex scene at the end when they're making the Antichrist, I kind of fast forwarded a little and he wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
God forbid he sees some nudity.
Mm-hmm.
I did show him Deadpool the other day, which was kind of irresponsible of me, but whatever.
Yeah.
He's 13 now.
Yeah.
Every time somebody showed up, he would look at the TV and go, wait, I know that person.
Yeah.
What that? Who's that? Craig T. Nelson shows up. Why do I know him?
Yeah.
Poltergeist. Oh, yeah, Poltergeist. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then Jeffrey Jones shows up. But he's Beetlejuice. Oh, yeah, Beetlejuice. Okay. You know?
Yeah. The movie felt seedier to me maybe a little bit this time because of two reasons. One is, like, I made the mistake of reading the IMDb trivia and they were saying, like, the apartment that Craig T. Nelson lives in was like a Trump apartment.
Yes.
And like that's why it's all gold and everything. And like once I read that, I couldn't get out of my head that he was like a proxy for that.
Yeah, right.
So, and then also like the monologue, a closing argument at the end by Pacino, it's like late 90s.
So many names.
And it's teeing up like
what a picture.
Round 20 of the heavyweight bout between
right.
God and the devil.
Right.
And you're just like, oh, I think the devil's winning. You know, we're like, you know, a fifth into the round. And I think he's landing some haymakers this century. So I think in a way, the movie feels like more despairing to me
sure.
than it used to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that kind of just strengthens the movie in a way, too.
It's for a 2.5-hour movie. I've weirdly seen it a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
Not so many times that I should have it memorized, but
yeah.
I kind of do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for whatever reason, every scene has stuck with me because there's movies I've seen probably just as many times that are kind of foggy in my memory.
Yeah.
Devil's Advocate, as I watched it, I was remembering every beat.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way.
Yeah,
there's a lot of memorable set pieces.
Yeah,
and everything from it. Yeah.
What do you think of the whole ending? Not the monologue, not that, but the epilogue. I mean, I don't like the whole like where he turns into Keanu and then he turns into an angel, and I'm just like, we're having too much fun with the CG guys.
The black or white CGI.
Yeah, you know, I think it works when their faces are morphing.
Yeah. Him going from the reporter into Pacino is a well done special effect.
Sure.
It doesn't ruin anything for me
okay.
with the movie, but I don't really like it just because it's like sort of the slasher movie like
right.
thing where it's like
right.
I want they've earned this victory and I want them to have it for a little while.
Okay.
And it also sort of introduces a lot of questions for me, like where all of a sudden, like, John Milton is the architect and this is another Neo, where it's just like, how many times has this happened?
Right,
and like,
right.
is this just kind of on this continuous loop now?
Is he bound
or
to fall for it eventually just because he passed this test?
Yeah. Like, is it always vanity that's going to be his trapping? And like, you know, how
my favorites,
like, what test was this? Was this the first one?
Right,
and like,
right.
And then also there's like things where it's like, I know that Pacino says, you know, like we're into law because it gets us our fingers in everything.
Which is kind of a neat concept.
It's kind of a neat concept, but also like if you were the devil, you would think that you'd be like so all powerful that you don't need to have a fucking job. Like if you wanted to do evil shit and like guide people out of free will to do evil things.
Free will, right?
Yeah, like you could do the thing like in the subway where you're just fucking with somebody and just like coercing them into going home and murdering someone. Right. But like, do you have to like, you know, set up an LLC and like pay people's benefits and things like that?
He has to worry about payroll.
Yeah.
The devil. Yeah. Like,
I don't know. This makes me happy that we don't have, like, an F this movie apartment building.
We're going to.
Oh, okay.
But it's going to be the Movie Stew apartment building, because we're rebranding after episode 631.
I love Movie Stew. He's so down to earth. Did you hear his latest one? It's really good.
Really?
Yeah, it was about...
men. He completely misreads men.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought 3 episodes on Wild America was a little bit much.
I saw Wild America in theaters.
Oh, wow.
I went to see, that was the day that I saw That Thing You Do.
Yeah.
Then Wild America, then went home, got depressed again, went back to see That Thing You Do.
Was it because you saw Wild America that you got depressed?
I mean, maybe. I think I saw Wild America because I was depressed, and I was like, I need a further distraction, and it didn't do it for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I haven't seen Wild America since, so I don't remember much of it.
Yeah. There's one, I wrote this down, there's one throwaway moment where it's like, the scene is basically there for like Keanu Reeves to be like, what is up with John Milton? He can speak Chinese like fluently and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But then Pacino says, he's just like, you got to see this. There's a chicken that plays tic-tac-toe and never loses. And I'm just like, that had to have been a Pacino ad-lib.
100%.
Where he's just like, I'm going to add a little bit of, you know, frosting on this scene. So.
And then they never show the chicken playing tic-tac-toe, which is like, how do you set that up and never pay it off?
That would be great if on the end credits, it's just like fireballs.
Yes.
And then like chicken playing tic-tac-toe.
He should have been part of that montage at the end where everything's going to shit and statues are moving and everything's on fire and Connie Nielsen turns to ash.
Yeah.
And then there's just superimpose it with a chicken playing tic-tac-toe while the score is just like, oh.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then it's just like, I see a red door, and then it goes, there's a lot of, like, just cool scenes in this.
It's my favorite scene.
Come on, Adam, let's raise a cane and get a combo meal.
The devil loves raising canes.
He's like, Texas toast, my favorite sin.
The fact that the devil runs raising canes explains why there's only one choice of dipping sauce, which is my biggest problem with that place.
It's like garlic bread, but it's not garlic bread.
Texas toast is his favorite sin.
And a side of slaw.
I like the subway scene. I think that's really cool.
What kind of dipping sauce would you like, sir? Give me all you got.
So just one.
Give me all you got. So just one. Anyway, the subway scene. Back to the subway scene.
Yeah, I like the subway scene.
Yeah,
because it's it's just so, the thing I like about it is you could tell that he's done this thousands of times.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, he gets like this sick pleasure off of doing things like that. So I just think that it's like a really good kind of shorthand for, because like sometimes, you know, I guess most actors when they're playing the devil kind of play it like, hey, look how much fun I'm having.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that it's not like Gabriel Byrne and End of Days.
Which I haven't revisited.
You know what
in
I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like it's and Pacino is such a ham, like that like when he goes for it, it could be like really, you know, if that's on your speed, if that's your speed, then it's really enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean the movie that honestly that I was that I kept contrasting it with as I watched it this time was Angel Heart because structurally they're so similar. But Angel Heart really treats certain things like a reveal, and De Niro plays the devil as much more sort of quiet and austere than Pacino does. You know, it's a sort of a study in two different acting styles, but the tones of the movie are totally different, too.
Yeah.
By the way, Angel Heart rules.
Yeah, it does. I watched that not too long ago.
So
it's
good.
Really, really good. I thought it was funny this time, like, towards the end of the movie, like, when Theron is having, like, full breakdown.
Yeah.
She kind of starts shining. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Where it's just like cutting to like other things. And I'm just like, this would be pretty cool if she was like a shiner.
I find it weird that she starts the movie with like what I think is supposed to be like her tacky Florida haircut.
Yeah.
And then she gets a more sophisticated New York haircut.
Mm-hmm.
And then we introduce Connie Nielsen into the movie, who has the same tacky Florida haircut that Charlize had for the beginning of the movie.
She has 90s Kidman hair.
100%. Is, yeah, but like by the end of the movie, she's got those crazy, crazy tendrils.
Yeah. That's why the whole scene with Al Pacino kind of like, I don't know. It's so cruel, but it's like the way that he's doing it is like, you could totally say, like, you know, somebody in a position of power would, like, make suggestions like this where he's, like, telling her, like, you know, you should pull your hair back and, like, your hair should be darker and stuff like that. You could totally tell that that's, like, something that really happens where it's, like,
this person
in a position of authority or power sees somebody who's a little bit more, like, lower status or, like, in a vulnerable position.
Yep.
And they coerce them. And it's, like, really manipulative and everything like that. But they do it in, like, the semblance of like a kindness.
I'm helping.
Yeah, and stuff. And I think that scene's like really effective because it subtly is just like, oh, this guy's like such a creep.
Right.
So, which would be even more effective if like it wasn't called the Devil's Advocate. And we knew that he was the devil from the beginning.
The sequence where Keanu is having sex with Charlize Theron and it keeps switching back and forth to Connie Nielsen. I think I texted you to joke that like that's a real first world problem that you're having sex with Charlize Theron and you can't stop thinking about another beautiful woman.
Yeah.
His reaction is very strange because every time it happens, he acts very confused. And it's like, I don't know, you get used to it after the second or third time, don't you? And you're just like, I'm clearly hallucinating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to go with this. But every time he's like, whoa, huh? What?
Yeah. And then every time she looks up, it's like switching between him and Stuart Pankin.
It's the only way she can finish is by picturing Stuart Pankin.
Well, that's not just her.
No, please.
That's pretty much everybody.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Welcome to Movie Stew.
Why do you think Movie Stew took off for a week? That guy had some stuff to work out. Yeah. It's just like, what's wrong, Movie Stew? I'm thinking of changing the name to Hank and Pankin.
I like it.
It's like, why? Because you want to do Tom Hanks and Stuart Pankin movies? It's like, no. A deeper seated issue.
It's a good New York movie.
It
looks great. The photography for the whole movie is really, really gorgeous. Like again, it's everybody brings their A game to make something that's really trashy, and I kind of love that.
The DP was the director of Exit Wounds and Cradle to the Grave.
That's right.
Yeah,
Bart Kowiak.
Yeah. I heard that there was an earlier version of this movie that, and this makes total sense, that was supposed to be a Joel Schumacher movie.
Oh, sure.
And Brad Pitt was going to play the Reeves part, which I think would have fallen into his, like, boring leading man.
Definitely.
Era. So I'm glad that it wasn't him playing it. But, like, kind of want to see the Schumacher version of this movie. Yeah.
I would have been similar in a lot of ways, I think,
because
I think he would be very interested in like how the apartments looked, you know, and like he's all about the production design and He still would have cast Machine, so yeah. That's kind of nice.
I bet he saw it like opening night. He's just like bitter that this isn't his movie, and then he's just like, "But that's my machine.
I found my machine.
It's like such a stupid detail that his name is Machine, yeah. But like it makes it so much worse.
Yeah, no, yeah. I just rewatched that movie when I had COVID and I was not sleeping at like 2 a.m. I was like, I'm putting on 8mm.
Yeah, there you go.
It worked.
I remember
it cured me of COVID.
It was one of my first like 20-year anniversary
films. I remember, yeah.
And I remember like patting myself on the back a little bit, like when I came up with the only thing to cure like Nicolas Cage's descent into the heart of darkness is a honey-do list. Really, Catherine Keener gives him chores at the end, yeah. And he's just like
he's raking, he's and he's all like, better.
I feel all right now. Domesticity. And then I guess Keanu, like, this wasn't the reason why he turned down Speed 2, but this is the movie he did instead of Speed 2.
Good choice, Keanu.
It is a good choice.
You got to be in a good movie, and you avoided a bad one.
Yeah. I don't know. I wish they still made movies like this.
Yeah.
Just sleazy movies for adults.
This one's probably a little higher than mid-budget. This was probably a pretty expensive movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for the cast and mm-hmm. the New York locations and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sort of an opulent movie, and you can tell that the money's on the screen. So my guess is it's more expensive than just a traditional mid-budget movie. But this was when Marcus Addison, which was my theater of choice in 97 because the AMC South Barrington 30 hadn't opened yet,
mm-hmm.
they started doing midnight shows with this movie. This was their first midnight show.
Yeah.
And so that's how I saw it. So I got out at like 3 a.m. of The Devil's Advocate. Yeah. But I was like, I didn't care because I was so excited to go to a midnight movie.
Totally. Yeah. This opened the same day as I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Which I saw the next night.
Yeah.
With a friend and did not like.
No, I'm not a fan of that one.
No.
You know what would be... I don't know. I think when I said the word sleazy, my mind immediately went Michael Douglas. I think Michael Douglas would have been great as the Milton part.
I agree 100%.
Because I think that Michael Douglas sort of like...
might be the devil?
No, I just think that he's... Whereas Pacino... If Pacino... Okay, I'm putting myself in the position of Kevin Lomax in this movie, the Keanu
Naturally.
Reeves part.
Yeah.
So... if Al Pacino was, like, espousing this, you know, his closing arguments of, like, you know, this is why you should join up with us and everything like that, I think it wouldn't be very persuasive. Like, I just think that it would feel kind of like, well, this guy's a nut. Like, I don't want to deal with him for the rest of eternity. Whereas I think, like, Michael Douglas could, like, be more, like... kind of normal and okay. like insidious
yeah.
and everything
yeah.
like that and persuasive because it's just like, yeah, this guy's a total perv. It would be kind of fun to hang out with him for a while.
Well, he would have to be, I think, in the Brad Pitt version because I think mm-hmm. their energies would match or would align more closely.
Yeah.
Because Keanu's intensity would be all wrong for the Michael Douglas devil.
Yeah. Yeah. What if it's Milton played by Michael Douglas, but it's still Charlie Sheen playing Bud Fox.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just like, Blue Horseshoe loves Beelzebub. And then Martin Sheen's just like, I don't know. This guy seems weird.
Where are the whores? I wanted to like rank this against some other movie devils.
Oh, I have some movie games for you.
Oh yeah,
too,
yeah, yeah. Okay. Let's play some movie games.
Okay, so this was nominated for one MTV Movie Award. Can you guess which one?
Best Butt Bite.
No, it should have won that
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
It was Best Villain.
Oh, all right.
The nominees were Billy Zane, Titanic.
Okay.
Al Pacino, The Devil's Advocate.
Yeah.
Gary Oldman, Air Force One.
Ugh.
The winner was Mike Myers and Austin Powers.
What?
And guess who else was fucking nominated that year and did not win?
Who?
Nicolas Cage and John Travolta for Face Off.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Can you imagine, like, the two of them getting up on the podium?
Sharing the award.
And Travolta embarrassing me because he embarrasses me every time he goes up to a podium.
That is true. Even at the Oscars this year, he was kind of embarrassing, wasn't he?
Yeah. He reminds me of, like, every time he goes up to the podium, I feel like I'm watching a school play and I'm a parent and, like, my kid's going to do something really dumb. And then afterwards, we got to hang out and he's like, wasn't that funny? And it's just like, yeah, it was something. I love you, buddy.
It was certainly a choice to do the Super Bowl shuffle in 2022.
It's how my parents probably felt when I did like a high school variety show.
Right, exactly.
And they said, blow me, I'm a cello, because I thought a cello was a wind instrument. And then my improv teacher like would give me a recommendation apparently I almost got the show shut down.
Holy cow.
Like, saying something bad.
Wow.
Yeah. I blew it. Blew it that night. Anyways.
Wow. Travolta.
Yeah. Anyways, maybe that's why I like him so much. I identify with his shitting the bed on stage. Okay. Better, or Devil's Advocate, better or worse than these 1997 horror movies?
I mean, 97 is a fucking, I don't know about horror, but like 97 is a great year for movies.
It's a good year for horror.
Okay.
There's some stuff.
All right.
Habit, the Larry Fessenden movie?
I mean, they're so different. How do I compare them? If you put both of them in front of me, I'm probably watching The Devil's Advocate, but Habit is probably like a better movie.
Okay. Devil's Advocate or Anaconda?
Devil's Advocate.
Event Horizon.
I like Devil's Advocate better. I know that's blasphemy to a lot of people who love Event Horizon. I'm not that guy.
I think it's close, but Event Horizon like seeps into my soul. I don't know. I just
watch
really
the
like
last,
that movie.
The last time I watched it was for a podcast with Heath. And I was like, for the first half, I was on board. And I was like, I've been wrong about this movie. It's actually really good. And then the second half, I remember lost me. And I don't remember why.
Is it because it gets jokey?
Maybe. I don't remember what it was that I was like, ah, no, fuck this movie. But I definitely need to watch it again because people love it.
That movie was such a pleasant surprise for me in the theaters because I think in the advertising, it was all like playing up sort of the mysterious sci-fi of it, and when you're watching it, it's like, oh, it's Hellraiser.
Yeah,
it's like,
for sure.
It was so exciting.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, this is one of your favorites: An American Werewolf in Paris.
Devil's Advocate would be better.
Tromeo and Juliet.
Devil's Advocate.
Alien Resurrection.
Devil's Advocate.
Wishmaster.
Oh, fuck! Fuck!
I won't get mad.
Yeah, no. I've seen Devil's Advocate more times, so I'm going to say Devil's Advocate.
I really want to watch Devil's Advocate with Divoff and Tammy Lauren. And
not a bad movie.
So Divoff is Milton. Tammy Lauren.
I've had so many names.
I want her to be Kevin Lomax.
Yeah, she has to be Kevin Lomax.
And then I want Backwards Hat Josh guy to be Charlize Theron.
Yes.
Where he's like losing his mind
and
everything. And then she's just like... She's just like, I don't want to work for the devil, you piece of shit. And then Divoff is just like, he's like, the battle between good and evil everlasting.
What if I were to offer you hot dogs and a ball game?
Everlasting. let's see. Okay, Devil's Advocate or Tetsuo 2, Body
I've never
Hammer.
Seen any of the Tetsuo movies.
Yeah, I haven't either. I don't know if this is a horror movie, but it was in the ad nauseum book for 97 for horror. Cronenberg's Crash.
I mean, I like Crash better, but I probably wouldn't call it a horror movie.
Okay.
It's a sexier movie than The Devil's Advocate.
Yeah. That's one of those movies where it's like, this is sexy and I feel bad that I
anti-sexy and yet maybe by virtue of the casting, becomes.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing that's actually hot going on in that movie, but Rosanna Arquette bends over the car and you're just like, Jesus Christ.
Did you see the, there's like a clip that resurfaced at Cannes where like somebody asked about the nudity in Crash. Did you see that?
No.
So they're doing like a panel after Crash's premiere and somebody, one of the journalists asked Cronenberg, was just like, why did you choose to have to showcase so much female nudity and not male nudity? And then Cronenberg is trying to answer it like in a very polite way and like, you know, being straightforward with it, but like not being glib at all about his answer. And then, like, James Spader's, like, wearing sunglasses and sitting back and stuff. And he's just like, I could answer that for you. And then he just leans into the mic and he's just like, because we're fucking. And when you're fucking, you don't see the penis all the time. And then he just kind of sits back.
Of course he does.
Like, yeah. And it just reminded me of, whatchamacallit. There's, like, a meme of, it was like Jeremy Renner co-presenting an award with Jennifer Lopez.
What?
And then she says something like, and you're golden. And he goes, and you've got the Globes. And then there's like in the meme, it's like zooming in on his face. And it's like, I'm a bad boy.
He's the main attraction.
He is. He's the perfect distraction. Yeah.
Main attraction should be the theme song for movies too.
It would be great if Jeremy Renner was John Milton and then everybody was just like, no.
I'll continue to do the right thing, thanks.
Yeah, I'm good, thank you very much.
Not interested.
Yeah. Okay, Devil's Advocate or The Relic?
I love The Relic, but as you point out, it's too dark.
Yeah.
So I'll say Devil's Advocate.
There's an HD transfer of it on HBO Max, and I've been curious to play it to see if, like, somehow...
I mean, I have the Blu-ray. It's still pretty fucking dark.
Yeah. Devil's Advocate or I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Devil's Advocate.
Lost Highway.
Lost Highway.
Mimic.
I need to rewatch Mimic. I haven't seen it since opening day.
Scream 2.
Scream 2's good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still going Devil's Advocate.
Office Killer.
Never saw it.
And Texas Chainsaw the Next Generation.
Devil's Advocate.
Okay. And then the last one is Devil's Advocate or these 1990s lawyer movies.
Ooh, all right.
Okay. Ghosts of Mississippi.
Devil's Advocate.
Murder in the First.
That's Kevin Bacon, Gary Oldman?
Yeah.
Never saw it.
Rounders.
That's a lawyer movie?
He's a law student.
I forgot about that. Rounders is very entertaining.
Rounders could be a show.
You think?
I think so.
Don't you think it would just devolve into us doing Malkovich the whole time?
Well, yeah, but
don't
want to do it.
Splash pot.
I'd like movies to. I listen to it when I splash the chips.
Do you have my money? Movies to.
You think this is game movies to?
You are main attraction movies to.
Teddy KGB is John Milton.
I have so many names.
I want you to give me son, but I want you to take her body like I unravel this Oreo cookie.
I see red door. I want to paint it black.
I want the chicken who plays tic-tac-toe and never loses.
Give me more than one dipping sauce, Raising Cane.
Texas toast is my only vice. I like it buttered on both sides because I'm a bit of a kid. Extra napkins, please.
This is the Rounder show, by the way. Yeah. You get two for one this week, everybody.
Okay. Devil's Advocate or Class Action?
Class Action is enjoyable for the Gene Hackman performance.
Okay.
It's got Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
Mm-hmm.
Still going Devil's Advocate.
Amistad.
I feel bad saying this, but Devil's Advocate.
A Civil Action.
Just rewatched that
mm-hmm.
when we did our Travolta Cage Christmas,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Probably better than Devil's Advocate.
Yeah. Time to Kill.
Devil's Advocate.
JFK.
JFK.
The Firm.
The Firm.
The Crucible.
Never saw The Crucible.
The People versus Larry Flint.
Devil's Advocate.
In the Name of the Father.
Devil's Advocate.
Primal Fear.
Fucking.
I'm sorry.
Primal Fear.
What a time to be alive. Look at all these lawyer movies.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
The 90s.
Yeah.
I have to choose The Devil's Advocate because...
Okay. I get it.
You get it. Thank you.
My Cousin Vinny.
Probably My Cousin Vinny.
Philadelphia.
Probably Philadelphia.
A Few Good Men.
Ooh. I don't know. I like A Few Good Men. I'll say A Few Good Men.
That's what I'm looking for to lead my law firm. A few good ones.
Did you order Code Red on Private Santiago?
You're goddamn right I did.
You can't handle truth.
I'm gonna rip off your head and shit down your neck. You need me on that wall.
Okay. Devil's Advocate or Trial and Error?
Trial and Error.
Devil's Advocate or Body of Evidence?
Devil's Advocate.
The Client.
Never saw The Client. Who did The Client?
Schumacher.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Okay.
Fatal Instinct. The parody movie.
I mean, Devil's Advocate.
Fatal Instinct has one of the funniest things I've ever seen in a movie.
What is it? Because I feel like I've seen Fatal Instinct and I don't remember laughing.
Which is judge or whatever calls recess, and then they do a smash cut and they're all outside on playground equipment and Armand DeSante is on a swing going crazy, and then they blow the whistle and they're like, all right, back to court, and he goes, I love recess. It's just because it's Armand DeSante.
Yeah, I wonder if it was somebody else if I would like that movie.
Yeah.
More. Is that Carl Reiner?
I think so.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is Carl Reiner.
Okay.
It is, yeah.
Devil's Advocate or Liar Liar?
Devil's Advocate.
Presumed Innocent.
Presumed Innocent.
The Rainmaker.
Rainmaker.
Regarding Henry.
Never saw it.
Reversal of Fortune.
Probably Reversal of Fortune.
Okay, that's it.
Those are good. I like lawyer movies.
I'm closing the book.
Even the ones where I had to choose Devil's Advocate, it's like a lot of times I was picking it over a movie I really like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rainmaker is so good, by the way.
Yeah.
Love that movie.
That's one thing that I like about 2022 so far, is it's just been like me growing in appreciation for Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh, yeah.
Just because I saw Conversation and Peggy Sue Got Married for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, man, this guy's like 7 or 8 deep in like great movies. Yep. Like not just good movies.
Right,
like
right.
Great movies.
Made The Conversation and Godfather 2 in the same year.
Yeah. And then on The Offer, he seems like... I mean, it's I like Dan Fogler, but like the thing that kind of is weird about the Pacino portrayal and the Francis Ford Coppola portrayal on The Offer is they make them seem like these insecure, like running to the producer, I need help type guys. Okay. Whereas like you watch Hearts of Darkness and it's just like, man, this guy is he's a genius, and like he's so, you know, he's such an artist and like. For lack of a better word, an alpha. Like, he's the guy driving the boat. Like,
for sure, yeah.
And he's not, like, running to, like, get help from producers and stuff like that.
Are you excited for him to make, whatchamacallit?
Megalopolis, yeah. Or whatever it's called? Yeah, yeah. I hope it's successful for his sake, because he's putting all the money up.
Yeah, he sure is.
But no, I mean, like, I'm excited for... I haven't been, like, crazy about his most recent movies, but, like...
I haven't seen, like, Tetro and...
Tetro, I remember,
Youth
was
Without
pretty
Youth?
Good.
Is that the
I never
one?
Saw Youth Without Youth. Okay. I never saw Twixt or whatever it's called.
Oh, no, I didn't either. That was the one where he was going to, like, go around and, like, do live musical accompaniment and shit and, like, change the movie from screening to screening, right?
Is that the last thing that he did?
I don't know.
I can't remember. I feel like there was one other one that he did more recently. But yeah, Rainmaker, I think, is the most recent great movie.
Oh my god, Rainmaker. And I'm sure I've told this story before. Something called Distant Vision?
Mm-hmm. I don't know that one.
But before that, it was Twixt.
Okay.
What the hell is Distant Vision? It has no stars. I saw Rainmaker as part of like a 5-movie day, along with like Flubber and possibly The Jackal, and like it was a rough day. Anastasia. Yeah. It was a rough day at the movies. Mm-hmm. And I went to see The Rainmaker because it was out and it was new, and I resented it because I was like, fuck all these Grisha movies.
Yeah.
This was like post Time to Kill, and I resented, like, you're not going to sell me on this Matt Damon guy. Quit trying to shove leading men down my throat. And then I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
It was the best way to, like, be taken by surprise.
It's one of the great uses of narration ever in a
Absolutely.
Movie, too.
And so, he wrote the narration, right?
Who, Damon?
Coppola wrote the narration.
Probably.
I think added it for the movie or something, but...
No.
I don't remember all the credits on that movie.
DeVito got robbed of an Oscar nomination.
So did fucking Bruiser Lyman.
Oh my God, Mickey Rourke.
Speaking of Angel Heart.
Did you hear, there was like a Blank Check episode where I guess Griffin Newman saw like a screening of some movie and like Darren Aronofsky was there. So, and he was like, okay, he's like, I'll tell the truth. Cause like, we're not on like the awards tour anymore. He's like, working with Mickey Rourke is a fucking nightmare. It's like working with like an 8-year-old child and stuff like that. But I heard all these stories like, about like how basically Aronofsky was like trying to do like Marissa Tomei solids of like not having too many takes where she has to be with Mickey Rourke.
Oh wow.
And stuff.
Okay.
And so like there's that scene in the bar where he's just like, you know, just have one beer with me.
Yeah.
And she like shotguns the beer. Yeah. And it's like, that wasn't in the script. That was like, she just wanted to get the fuck out of there. She's just like, I will pound this beer like to get away from him.
She shoots all the swordsmen.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, well, this was fun. Thank you.
I want to see Marissa Tomei as Indiana Jones.
Yeah,
that would be pretty cool.
I'm into it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm more into that than I am into Harrison Ford playing it again.
Yeah, I don't know what that's gonna be like. I kind of want to see Teddy KGB as the villain of the new
Indiana
Jones.
Oh, absolutely.
He's just like standing there, and instead of doing the sword thing, he's just undoing an Oreo cookie. Here's his word, shoots him.
Movie is over. This was fun. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah. Definitely listen to movies too. Good stuff coming up.
It's good.
Mm-hmm.
Join in on Junesploitation starting next week.
Yep.
And we will be back with another show for Space Day.
Oh.
Yeah, that's day one of Junesploitation is Space Day, and it's our first podcast of Junesploitation. So
very exciting.
Yeah. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.